Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mehler here. Glad to have you along today as we take a look at how you can avoid injury while transitioning into that warmer weather that we are sure to have coming someday.
We're hoping.
We're hoping. Oh, man. Bill Boisenhall, senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic at UW Hospitals and Clinic. One of our guests, the other Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer at the University of Wisconsin Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Regular guests for a long time. In fact, they come by, what is it, the third Monday of every month.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
So it's exactly.
Great to have you back.
Good to be back, wishing it was a nicer Monday. And you know what happens when we have these long stretches of bad weather is people then, when the weather's nice, try to get everything done on that one day, because we have one day when it's going to be nice and we have to do everything. And somehow we have to try to temper that and not try to do everything in one day and try to spread it out and plan it. And I know the weather's bad, but if you can get out for an hour and do a little bit, it helps break it up.
Yeah, it'll save those aching muscles, at least to a degree anyways. But it's difficult with this roller coaster ride we've had with the weather.
Yeah.
And Laura, you're right. When we do get a nice day, it's like you need to make up for lost time. And it's difficult to spread things out.
Yeah.
Cross-training in the yard, basically.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
And even on the sports side, I'm the coach of the Holy Cross Crusaders girls softball team.
Oh, excellent.
And you know, this time of the year is practice time, and it's practice for a lot of kids out there. And we go through stretching and a little running and so forth to warm it up.
We were out in the soccer field on Friday night in that horizontal wind and rain, and the boys were running around and sloshing through puddles, and I just thought, oh, I hope nobody gets hurt.
Well, that's just it. It's hard to get warmed up, one, and then in between innings, or if it's halftime at a match, you get cold so fast that, you know, it's easy to get hurt in those kinds of situations.
Yeah, yeah, so stay warm.
Stay warm.
Yeah,
warm
layers.
Up.
Stretch. Layers. And
do
just,
a little stretching.
You know, hats, gloves, things that you can take on and off, depending upon if you're moving into the wind or with the wind, and you know, things to break the wind on these windy days. Those things are all important, and then you can just add and remove layers as you need.
Right. We have some callers on, well, not necessarily callers, some emailers. Pete in La Crosse, 54, 5'11", 185 pounds, looking for some advice, actually diet advice in ways. He wonders, what things should I eat to improve hip and knee fitness? Are chocolate and carbonated soda bad for joint health?
I usually wrap my chocolate bar around my knee. That
hurts
a lot.
Hey, exactly. Kind of like, I think if you held it on with magnets,
there you go.
That would be even better. Or with the a little bit of apple cider vinegar and a bread, plastic bread bag.
I'll try that. Yeah.
You know, joint health, there's a lot of information on nutrition and joint health and anti-inflammatory diets. If you look online, you can find a lot of information about diets that are protective of your joints. You know, is chocolate bad? Well, no. I mean, nothing's bad in moderation. I mean, that's kind of what they say. You know, avoiding a lot of sugared sodas and things is important for many aspects of your health, not just your joint. But, you know, but increasing your omega-3 fatty acids, you know, watching your dairy, watching your red meat and those kinds of nutritional intakes that are associated with the, you know, inflammation around a joint would be key.
Yeah.
And not only and it's for the joints, but your heart and all the other organs in the body as well. And certainly diet ties into just overall weight and fitness level. And, you know, the heavier people are, the greater the load on the hips and knees. And that can aggravate a little bit of underlying arthritis if that's present. And so it's a good question in looking, you know, what can you do to control yourself to help promote a healthy lifestyle? And diet is certainly a big part of that.
And I just read a study about people who imagined themselves eating food prior to eating it ate less.
Oh.
A little visualization.
A little visualization.
So
you
think about eating less or you just think about food?
Yeah. If you're going to eat some M&Ms, you decide you're going to have that chocolate. Instead of just sitting down and eating, you know, that bowl of M&Ms, you stop and you imagine yourself eating them sort of one at a time. And then you eat them. Then you eat less.
You eat fewer.
Yeah. Oh. It was just one study, but I found it interesting.
M&Ms. Mind over matter.
Mind over matter, yep.
Well, I have to tell you, there was a bowl of M&Ms on my mother-in-law's dining room table, and I did not think about it before. Just yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Exactly. Yeah, it's hard to imagine when they're sitting there calling, eat me, eat me.
But I'm going to remember that. I'm going to try that. Mary in Elm Grove, we go to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks for calling.
Thank you. My question has to do with a shoulder that's been bothering me, and I've been trying to work out on a somewhat regular basis, and I notice that the more I work out, the worse the shoulder is getting, top of the shoulder when I raise my arms. And so I'm wondering, what do I do about that? Do I go to a sports medicine clinic? Do I exercise to try to see? I mean, do I consider a rotator cuff injury? I just don't know how to proceed.
Was there an injury, Mary? Did you have a fall or an injury, or
no.
It just came on gradually?
It came on. Well, actually, it's been bothering me for a while, but it comes and goes. And now, since I've been using the shoulder more, it's come back again.
Okay. So, you know, that sort of speaks to the importance of matching the right exercise to the problem. So just exercise in general for a specific problem like a rotator cuff or a shoulder impingement problem, there are exercises that will make it worse and exercises that will make it better. So getting some guidance on the right things to do makes sense. You can go to a physical therapist and have your shoulder evaluated and get set up on the right set of exercises. They can go through the things that you've been doing and modify those or teach you sort of what's right and wrong about those exercises so you can have the right exercise program. So that's probably where I would start with this kind of a problem.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Does an x-ray help in the diagnostic process? Do you need an x-ray?
You know, in the absence of an acute injury where you would suspect a fracture or something like that, in the absence of neurologic symptoms, numbness, tingling, where you might wonder if it's coming from your neck instead, there's not a lot of return on an x-ray, especially in a shoulder because it's a non-weight-bearing joint. You might see that there's some arthritis around your acromioclavicular joint, and that sort of speaks to the prognosis and that if you have arthritis in that area, sometimes it takes a little longer for your shoulder to get better, but it's not going to change the treatment program significantly unless you fail a decent conservative program. So if you get on the right exercise and rehab program and you're still not getting better, then they might do a radiograph to see what's contributing factors are happening.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. I think, Mary, what the therapist would do would be assess your flexibility, your range of motion at that shoulder, at your neck, upper back, and then also assess for strength. And that would be the primary guidance of what type of machine to stay away from, what to do more of. And I agree that an x-ray wouldn't make much difference in the initial plan of care at this stage for you.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
Let's turn to Carla in Madison next. Hi, Carla.
Well, hello, and I am just delighted to be on your show, Larry. This is Carla from Holy Cross.
Oh, hi, Carla.
Just talked about the Crusaders a moment ago, and it's just so funny because I was talking to my son yesterday, and he's like, Mom, you should go see a physical therapist. I'm like, ding, 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 why didn't I do that? And I thought, what could be better? Maybe I'll get on the show, and I just got in my car to run an errand. It's like, here I am. So divine intervention.
Exactly. The stars are aligned.
So it's shoulder day. The last really big snow we had, which was like, 18 inches or whatever, our snowblower quit.
Mm. Murphy's Law.
The four of us got outside and just shoveled it all. And when I was done, it didn't hurt while I was doing it, but when I was done, I could tell that I damaged something in my shoulder. And that was, 6 weeks ago? And I haven't been able, it just hasn't healed since then. So the symptoms are if I'm just like standing straight and I try to raise my hand off to the right, I can just feel almost all the way down from my elbow up to my shoulder. The muscle just hurts.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So, and I probably haven't let it rest as much as I should have. It hurt most when it first happened, or just like raising my arm up, I just couldn't do it. And so I gave it a couple weeks and I started exercising again, and then it will hurt some more, and then I'll stop for a week, and then I'll start again. So I'm just wondering if I just haven't given it enough rest, or if there's some exercises I can do.
Yeah, no, it's 6 weeks. It's not that you haven't given enough rest, and that's a perfect example of the start and stop that most people do. And I just gave my mother this lecture. So nice to be able to do that a couple days ago, because she has some hip pain. She said, well, I'm just going to stop walking for 2 weeks, and then I'm going to start again. I said, no, because what happened to Carla is what happens. You stop doing stuff, and you stop using it, and then you go back and you start doing stuff, and it immediately hurts again. You've just wasted 2 weeks. So you need to get in and get it looked at and get on the right exercise program. And for someone who's right-hand dominant and who's an active person, it gets really hard to dose the exercises to keep them within the tissue tolerance levels. And that's where you need that guidance from a physical therapist to help you determine how much is too much and how much rest is the right amount and when to rest and when to push forward and things like that. So I think your son was right.
Yeah, I'm
going to
have to tell him he was right. Okay.
Yeah. Thanks, Carla.
Yeah, I think you're going to need some guidance. If it was going to get better on its own by 6 weeks, it'd be better. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate the call. And Carla's in pretty good shape, too. So.
Yeah,
She's an active person, you know.
It happens to the best of us, people who are in great shape. And you're in good shape, but you're not in shape for shoveling heavy wet snow, for 2 or 3 hours.
No.
You know, activity is very specific. I find the same thing. I hung some butterflies from the ceiling in my daughter's room, and I consider myself to be relatively
pretty
healthy.
Good shape, yeah.
But I had my head tipped back, and I was very thoughtful to not stay in that position a long time, to move my head. Next day, my neck hurt. I mean, it just is. So you just have to be careful and thoughtful about the kinds of stresses you're placing on your body when you do these
things. It's
really
hard to prepare for those moments like 18 inches of wet snow.
Yes.
No matter how much exercise you do, getting
the children out was the right call.
That was a good call.
That's right. Get that snowblower fixed,
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff and Beloit, we're on to you now. Hi, Jeff. Thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning, or good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. Sam, probably like a lot of people, and I wake up a little stiffer in the morning, and getting up and moving around is good for me. So my daughter actually is a chiropractor, gave me some exercises that I could do before I even get out of bed, not exercises, but stretches. And I like to start the day with a stretching routine, so I wanted to kind of comment on that. And then what you guys said earlier about doing too much in one day, what I find is that on these crappy weather days, I sit around too much, and that's bad for me, sitting around and not moving around. So that's my comments.
Yeah.
Thanks for taking them.
Well,
yeah.
Good
right
comments.
On.
And, you know,
mm-hmm.
we are designed to move. In terms of keeping the joints and muscles happy. And first thing in the morning can be a tough time for lots of people.
Mm-hmm.
There's a general rule. There are some certain diseases or disorders that present with prolonged early morning stiffness that have a much more of an active inflammatory component to it, where physicians need to see that patient. And generally, if that early morning stiffness lasts for greater than 30 to 60 minutes in the morning, where you're still not loosening up yet, you know, that's different than the aches and pains that typically we talk about on the show here. Doing some gentle stretching before one gets out of bed, walking a little carefully when you first get out of bed until you start loosening up, generally are good principles. There are times where I'll instruct the patient to do some exercising before they go to sleep at night. Hopefully it'll help mm-hmm. them sleep more comfortably, help in the morning. And mattresses can make a difference too in positions that people wake up in.
Mm-hmm.
So those are all the educational things that we discuss with patients who come in to see if we can minimize that early morning stiffness.
You know, and some people have that expectation that they're going to wake up in the morning, they're not going to be mm-hmm. stiff. And as Bill said, our joints are made to move. And the older mm-hmm. we get, the more important that movement is. And it's a little bit like the engine of your car. When it's just sitting, the oil sits in the oil pan and it doesn't lubricate the parts of your engine. The same thing is true of your joints. When you're sort of immobile or resting at night, the synovial fluid kind of pools in the gravity-dependent portions of your joint, and they're not lubricating your joint surfaces. So it's very reasonable that it takes a little bit of movement to get that synovial fluid bathing your joint surfaces to loosen them up and get them working. So physiologically, it's sort of a fact of life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have more callers online, but there's open lines. You can join in, too, with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Larry Mueller here. Bill Boisenault, Lori Tyne Brody, my guests. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at physical fitness today and avoiding injury while we transfer into the warmer weather. And it's coming, I'm telling you. Our Lori Tyne Brody, Bill Boys, and all their guests. An email from Gary in Arena. I've had sharp neck pain for a while and now have pain at the base of my skull. No injury, but I have been diagnosed with some arthritis. Is this arthritis? Any advice that you might have?
Yeah, sharp pain. We always get a little more concerned about sharp pain as opposed to our last call, the stiffness and a little bit of achiness. Mm-hmm. And sharp pain, it tends to shoot, whether it's up into the head or down the arm. Again, generally implies that something's being pinched or caught. If the sharp pain's associated with a significant loss of mobility, you know, Lori mentioned before, mm-hmm. looking back up toward the ceiling or looking over one shoulder, that's when we generally recommend that people go in and be seen and have their neck evaluated. The fact that there hasn't been a traumatic injury lessens the concern about could there be a fracture or a nerve injury. But sometimes you get some arthritic changes that occur, and then you can get some pinching or catching at those joints. And so generally when we see those folks, we talk about posture, if they are exercising, what to do to protect their neck and enhance mobility. But, you know, sharp pain is not a pain that we want people trying to work through, whether it's stretching or exercising, because generally it's just going to lead to more irritation. So, you know, for Gary, if this has been going on for any more than a couple of weeks, you know, with the nature of what he's describing us, probably good for him to be seen.
Okay. We had an email from Bob in Minocqua. As a runner, developed calcaneal bursitis in my right heel 5 months ago. I've seen a doctor for x-rays. I'm going for PT now. I do stretches, ultrasounds, pain patch, massage, and take ibuprofen. Doing a lot. So yeah. Far, only slight improvement. Had an MRI today to try to pinpoint the sore area. Is the next approach a steroid injection? I've heard injections near or at the tendon can cause ruptures. How big a risk is this procedure?
Oh, what a great question. Yes, you would never want to inject cortisone into your Achilles tendon. So I think getting the MRI was the right next move to find the source of the pain and make sure that it is in the bursa and not in the tendon. If it is a tendinopathy, then I would suggest changing the course of treatment from the ultrasound kind of thing to a pretty heavy eccentric loading program, which would help. If the problem really is in the bursa, and
that's an eccentric loading problem.
There are three basic kinds of muscle contractions: an isometric, where the joint doesn't move; a concentric, where the muscle is shortening and the joint is moving in one direction; and then the eccentric is the lowering phase or the. So for an Achilles, if you were up on your toes, it'd be the lowering phase.
Okay.
So there's a lot of evidence about the success of eccentric loading programs in tendinopathy. So if it is truly a bursitis, then a cortisone injection into the bursa could be a reasonable alternative to kind of shrink that down. And then at that point, perhaps his other rehab program would become more effective. Mm-hmm. If it's in the tendon, the eccentric program, there's also other kinds of injections in the tendon that are successful. Now, the platelet-rich plasma, the PRP injections, not cortisone, are successful. So there's other alternatives out there. But my question always in a runner is why in one and not the other? So I'd want to go back to Bob's history and figure out if there's something in the past that would point you in the direction of one heel versus the other. And if not, I'd want to look at him and go do evaluation of him to see if there's something about his anatomy that's perpetuating this.
Yeah, these conditions are really tough to shake. It's hard to rest it. You know, we're on our feet, we're walking.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And even and where Bob has this, even just your shoe rubbing on it, it's really just causes some irritation. So it can take longer than the bursitis is in other places in the body.
Kathy and Cameron, we're on to you now. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I have a question about my neck.
Okay.
I have rheumatoid arthritis for 25 years, and about 3 years ago, I had shooting neck pain. I saw a physical therapist. I did some stretches, had some improvement. But since this last winter, it's gotten worse, and I just had an MRI, and they feel I have cervical radiculopathy, if I'm pronouncing it properly, with moderate compression of the right exiting nerve root. And they want me to go to a pain clinic. I wondered if that's the route to take or for injections, or should I go back to the physical therapist? Or
no, good questions. And you pronounced it perfectly. Radiculopathy just implies that part of your pain pattern is coming from nerve itself. And that sounds like what they found in the MRI, that a nerve is being compressed and irritated. And that can go along with a variety of neck conditions, including rheumatoid arthritis. The pain clinic, as long as they are, they should be combining whether it's medications / injection to calm that nerve down with a program that also looks at posture and flexibility and strength. When you have an irritation in the neck like that, it's really important that they evaluate your shoulders and your upper back mobility and posture. Some of us, when we're caught in this kind of slouch posture, forward head posture, that puts the joints of our neck, some of the joints of our neck at end range, and so that can cause stiffness, it can cause some irritation. So, you know, as long as they're looking beyond your neck as part of the treatment program, then it would be a well-rounded program for you. With rheumatoid arthritis, you need to be a little careful because of some of the ligamentous laxity that can go along with this condition. So, again, be getting good advice on the types of exercises to avoid and not just the exercises that you should be doing. And that's what they should be able to help you with.
Okay. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Email from Joelle, I heard fish oil can cushion joints and help keep arteries clear of plaque. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, fish oil is part of the anti-inflammatory diet. So the oils that have higher levels of omega-3 fatty acids rather than omega-6 fatty acids in the cod liver oil and other fish oils are known for being high in omega-3 fatty acids. So, yes, fish oils are part of that good diet. And, you know, I would just suggest if you had questions on that to speak with your primary care physician or a registered dietitian to go over some of those specifics in your diet to look at what you're eating, what's coming in with your regular diet and what things you might need to supplement because of your diet.
I've actually been on taking fish oil tablets for quite a long time, and it seemed to have helped, at least anecdotally, it helped me because I always had little aches and pains, and most of those have gone away.
Oh, that's wonderful. I mean, I take them, but you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know what would have happened if you hadn't taken them.
Right.
And so if you're feeling okay and you're taking them, I'd say carry
on. They're working.
Carry on. Yeah. If it's not broke.
You know, there's relatively low risk, but Lori's right. If you're concerned and want to take things like this, then what is your concern? And sometimes things like this can interact with medications that people are on or other supplements that people are on. And so just keeping your primary care physician in the loop and making sure they're helping to stay on top of things maybe you should not do that outwardly sound like a good thing to do.
Let's turn to Mary in Madison next. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
My sister has been diagnosed with compartment syndrome in her calf area, and she had pressures of about 30 in, I think, 30 in one leg and 27 in the other, and surgery was indicated by the surgeon. And I'm just wondering if there's PT that she could try before doing the surgery, which sounds really intense.
Yeah, what is compartment syndrome?
Well, the muscles and vasculature and nerve bundles that come down your legs to your feet pass through fairly closed and tight compartments in your calf muscles.
Oh.
So in other parts of your body, there's it's not quite as firm. And so if you have a little bit of compression, there's some leeway. But in your calf, especially when you start working, those muscles such as runners or other athletes who are using their calf muscles a lot, you get an increase in blood flow to the working muscles. And as that increases, there's no room for expansion. And so the pressure gets really high in those compartments, and they can actually cut off the vascular and nerve supply to your feet. So sometimes they'll complain of vascular symptoms or neurologic symptoms in their feet, and it's due to compression in the calf. In terms of physical therapy, I'd say there's not really a physical therapy treatment for this, especially when your pressures are high. They can try some stretching, and they can do some sort of cooling and things like that to try to bring some of the swelling and inflammation down, but there's not a prevention for this. So when your pressures are high and they're impacting your quality of life, surgery is typically the recommended.
Yeah, I've had a few folks that I've been able to help, and it's a relatively small percentage who have pressures. And 30 milligrams of pressure is kind of that threshold
when
there's increased risk of the blood vessel compromise and nerve pressure. But it takes somebody, in terms of responding to PT, they need a pretty high pain tolerance because you do a lot of deep stretching, a lot of deep massage to try to stretch that compartment out a little bit, the fascia, which is the outer envelope of these compartments. And you modify foot and ankle mechanics, the arch of the foot and muscle imbalances, trying to decrease the workload of those muscles. So hopefully people can return to the level of function they want to be at.
Mm.
But the key part is somebody who has this, if they're having some tingling or numbness and weakness or the foot's a little cold, I mean, the neurovascular compromise can be really serious.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Mary, for calling. Molly in Baraboo, we're on to you now. Hi, Molly.
Hi. I might have heard something approaching an answer to my question, but I have a sprained Achilles tendon as a result of being a relatively new runner.
Mm-hmm.
I was maybe 6 weeks to 2 months into running when it started to feel strained, and I stopped, but it's now been 6 months or longer, and it still is bothering me.
Are you still running?
No, I haven't been running.
Okay, and it's only in one?
It's just in one.
Okay. Any idea why the one? Were you running on a banked road or on a banked track or?
No idea. And there was no I don't remember any particular, injury.
It
just started to feel a little strained, and then it increased, and so I stopped. And it, it feels stiff when I wake up. It feels stiff when I've been driving.
Okay.
It feels if I swim and I'm doing a frog kick that can strain it. So
okay, so stiffness is probably the big thing now.
Yeah, I would say stiffness is
okay. And do you have point tenderness, like when you palpate down along that tendon? Can you find a spot that's where you say, "Oh man, ouch, that's the spot"?
No, but I was trying to massage it with ice cubes,
uh-huh.
And that would really irritate it, make it flare up more.
Okay. And may I ask your age?
45.
Okay. Okay. Well, it sounds like an Achilles tendinopathy, and you know, it. This is just classic, as Bill suggested before. This is a really hard thing to rest because you're up walking around all day long. So it never really gets the kind of treatment it needs. I would suggest getting in and seeing a physical therapist about this because it's not going to get better. And it's only going to get worse over time as you start to stress it. So I would get in and get it treated right away. And I would probably start on a on an eccentric kind of lowering calf lowering program. You can try a little bit at home and see how it works. Usually what you do is you stand on 2 feet, you go up on your toes with your 2 feet, and then you lift up your non-involved leg and lower yourself down with your other one.
Okay.
The research has shown you have to lift pretty heavy. You know, historically, I've always said, well, it shouldn't hurt when you do this, and you start light and you work your way up. And there is some research that supports that. There's also another body of research that shows you have to lift pretty heavy, and it has to hurt before it gets better. So, you know, depending upon which camp you believe in, you can go either of those directions with that. But as Bill suggested, you really need some help with this because getting it dosed right when you're walking around on it all day long, it's very difficult to do to help you get over this. And the longer it hangs around, I assure you, the harder it's going to be to get rid of. So waiting another 3 months isn't going to help you, especially in the summer when you want to be active.
Yep. All right.
Yeah. So I'd get in and see somebody.
Thanks for calling. You mentioned, could you find a spot? Mark says, I have a spot on my back just below the shoulder blade that is often sore. When I have a massage, they tell me it's all knotted up. I've had it x-rayed, looks normal. Massages help for about a week. I've tried acupuncture. That helps for 3 days, about. Chiropractic has no effect. I suspect it's due to tension. It's much less bothersome when I'm on vacation.
any thoughts? You can say that about a lot of things.
It does help. Well, there are muscles back in that area, and not only associated with the shoulder blade, but also from the neck.
Oh.
And so clearly, if the muscle was only knotted or only tight, then Mark should have been better a long time ago. So there's something that's feeding into this spot, and oftentimes it's postural, you know, not just tension or stress, but posture related. Sometimes muscles on the front part of the chest wall, if they're tight, means the muscles in the back and the shoulder blade area are working harder. And so there's times we work on muscle imbalances on the opposite side just to take some stress off that spot.
Okay.
But posture, and if whether Mark's at a computer or does something with his hands really during the course of the day, we really work at their workstation and see what you can modify there to just take some of the physical stress off that spot, on top of the psychological stress of being at work, and not on vacation as well. But it's annoying. It's annoying, but it can simply relate it to the neck and not just right around that shoulder area.
Well, and when you're talking about work versus vacation, you made a good point that it's not just the psychological stress, but you have to look at what your body is physically doing during your work day. Whether when you're on vacation, you're reclined in a beach chair, and when you're at work, you're in an office chair with a workstation. And so it could be related to just being, you know, physically at that workstation, and some modifications such as a different kind of a chair or a standing workstation where you stand for a while or something like that could make a difference.
Yeah. Mary and Palmyra, we're on to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question and comment is regarding the core. I'm 51 years old, and the last few years I've had problems with my low back. However, in going to a PT, I found out through her, I've learned quite a bit through her, that my core is very weak. And so she's given me numerous core exercises. I'm still working on strengthening that and then trying to work myself up to the next level. And when I was speaking with her, I said to her, you know, this is so important, and I never really knew what the core muscles were. In fact, I had a very hard time trying to figure out, you know, what part of the muscle is the core that I'm really supposed to be engaging. And I finally overcame that. But in conversation with her, I said, shouldn't this be something that should be taught in schools, you know, and like in high school? And she said, oh, it should be taught in grade school. And then on top of that, she said as well that once women have, you know, give birth, she said after that, our core muscles are pretty much weakened and we need to build those as well after that. But I said, well, my OB doctor never mentioned anything to me about building up my core muscles again. Do you have any comments regarding that?
Well, I certainly would agree with that and support that. And, you know, many people do a lot of core strengthening exercises, Pilates and a lot of things that are focused on the core. But then when they walk out the door, that core muscle activation isn't part of the things that they do in their typical life. So, you know, hopefully what PT can do is help bridge that gap so that you're actually using that core strength. You learn how to engage the core in your daily activities because that's where we get hurt. So, yes, having a strong core is really important, but you, knowing how to use it and actually using it in your daily activities is really important.
Yeah, I think much of the public, and this kind of relates more to historical perspective, when people think of core at all, they would think about their abs, the six-pack abs you see on a billboard. And, you know, and there are different layers of abdominal muscles, and actually our six-pack ab component is probably least helpful related to the things that, that Lori mentioned. It may look good, but it's not going to protect you necessarily. And so by core, we mean muscles on the front, the back, and the sides, and not just in the trunk, but also through the hips and shoulder is what we're after. And engaging these muscles can be tricky. I've seen some people that are incredibly strong through the legs and arms, and so their core muscles don't have to work very much. They're doing activity through the muscles that are strong, and they can't isolate the muscles that are weak. And
Can I ahead. One other question: How does a person go? Because I was always very active, you know, in raising my children, and prior to that, all the time. I mean, I would always shovel my snow, no problem, nothing. And then all of a sudden, you know, now I started having problems with my back. How is it that, okay, because I never really realized what core was and I never, you know, knowingly was engaging my core, how do you lose that through the years?
Habit. We take the path of least resistance. And so you get into movement patterns, and Bill often mentions posture, and posture is really important. We get into comfortable postures, and you have motor programs that are running in your head. So when you say shovel snow, pick up paper off the floor, you don't think about it, but your brain, you know, pulls up the motor program that includes postures, movement patterns, muscle engagement that are all associated with pick up paper off the floor. And if it has faulty information, such as you're not engaging your core, you just repeat that over and over and over, over years of a lifetime. And those paths in your brain are the preferred pathways. So unless you stop and consciously retrain those programs or pathways that are sets of information that are clumped together that don't require conscious thought, you will keep going over those same improper movement patterns over and over all your life.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Thanks very much. For calling. Appreciate your call as well. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapists, our guests today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lots of callers online. Let's go back to the phones as we talk getting in shape and avoiding injury while transitioning into this warmer weather that's sure to come. Edith in Waukesha, you are up next. Hi, Edith.
Good morning. My husband and I were in a very serious accident on the freeway. A very large semi-truck hit us from the back. And we both had been diagnosed with whiplash. My whole right side was in incredible pain, mostly at the same place that another caller called, in my neck and also just below my shoulder blade and in the shoulder blade towards my spine and also my whole lower back. But about 3 weeks ago, my lower back started to hurt incredibly to the point that it takes me sometimes a half an hour before I am able to get out of bed. Not only the joints hurt, but the whole lower right side of my body and the back of my leg, and I just simply can't put any weight on it. I have been going 3 times a week to a chiropractor and 2 times a week to physical therapy, and I get relief for a short while, but a short while meaning 6-8 hours, and then the pain comes back, and every morning it's a terrible effort to try to get out of bed and get going. And it does hurt during the day too, but not like in the morning. Is there any suggestion on how to alleviate this pain so I can get out of bed a little bit easier?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Edith, can I ask you how long ago the accident was?
Accident was on January 20th.
Okay.
But this terrible pain started about three and a half weeks ago.
Right. Any idea why it started 3 weeks ago?
No.
3.5 weeks?
So, I have absolutely no idea.
Okay. So no slip or fall or anything like that?
Or fall. Although the physical therapist has given me some exercises which seemed incredibly to do at first, but then it became very painful. So I stopped doing it, and she told me to stop doing it, and she uses heat and massage. The chiropractor suggests ice, and but it's just not getting any better.
Okay. Well, in terms of your question about the mornings, working with your chiropractor and PT and looking at sleep positions, pillows between your knees, a certain type of pillow underneath your head supporting your neck, and the recommendation would be based on how much flexibility do you have, how easy is it for you to bend forward or backward or right side, left side, because sometimes using pillows in a variety of ways to support your trunk can be helpful in terms of what you feel first thing in the morning. The other thing, they can talk to you about your mattress itself. Sometimes mattresses are too soft, and then even putting a piece of plywood between the mattress and the box spring can firm it up a bit. You can get mattress pads if the mattress is too firm. That can help with some of the early morning. So they should also be talking to you about the mattress that you're sleeping on. How firm is it? How soft is it? How new or old is it? Can also be helpful. And then, again, as we had an earlier caller, they may be able to suggest some exercises specific for you before you get out of bed. That are gentle in nature, just to kind of warm those joints up so that those first few steps are a little bit easier for you. When you start your day like that, it really makes for a tough time. And the fact you've gotten worse in the last few weeks, I mean, that's what I would talk to them about. Sleeping positions, use of pillows, talk about your mattress, and then any type of exercise, gentle things you can do while you're in bed. And again, they should be basing that on what movements are easy for you and what movements are difficult and painful for you. Mm-hmm. And hopefully they can come up with a plan that will just, you know, make life a little bit easier for you at the start of the day.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Edith, appreciate your call very much. Ken in Oshkosh, we're on to you now. Hi, Ken.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. I got a problem. It seems like it started in my neck and it's gone down into my shoulder, and then now it's working its way down into my bicep. And it's like in the right where your, you know, shoulder bends down towards your arm, I can rub that and I can feel it, the tendons or muscles like rolling. I mean, they're really, really stiff. And it, you know, and it goes, when I move my neck in a certain position, it, you know, kind of, I feel it down in my shoulder. And at night, I cannot sleep on that side without at all. And if I put arm up, like, underneath my pillow, like, lay my head down and put my hand up underneath my pillow, it really, I mean, it feels okay, but soon, if I want to pull my arm out, I have to literally take my other arm and pull it out. I mean, it doesn't want it. It's like it hurts so much.
Yeah. Ken, how long has this been going on?
For about a month.
Okay. Anything happened a month ago? I mean, anything traumatic or lots of physical work that were unusual or different
for
you?
Yeah, well, that's it. When they were you know, I thought they were going to, you know, get to my problem when they were talking about snow shoveling.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yes.
And because that's when it first seemed to start.
Okay.
And I thought it was my pillows. You know, I thought it was just a pinched nerve in my neck and it was working its way down. But after snow shoveling, it got worse.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's most likely what it is. And what you're describing, there probably is some nerve involvement and probably a little bit of combination of both your neck and your shoulder. That's what makes it so difficult for this to go away on its own because it's tough to rest those areas adequately. Any numbness or tingling down into that hand?
Well, I do get some tingling, like down into my elbow. You know,
okay.
It's like, you know, it started like up in my neck and then my shoulder, and now it's working down into my bicep and my elbow.
Yeah, you know, we use the arm as kind of a barometer of how irritated are things in the neck. And the further down the arm the pain or tingling goes, tingling means the more irritated things are up in the neck. And, you know, Ken, the fact that it's been a month at this stage, I would recommend that you go in and get examined. And the therapist they can talk about your sleeping posture positions, the pillows. Do you need a cervical pillow where that gives you different support? And then certainly some things to avoid doing to give this nerve a chance to calm down. And then, you know, they look at your posture, look for strength and flexibility issues. But you don't want this getting to the point where you have constant numbness and tingling down into that hand, because then it'll take months to go away. And you know, the therapist working with your primary care physician can also determine, you know, would some medication help you get over the hump here to start with too. But what you're describing is pretty classic for, you know, there's a nerve that's irritated and it's involving multiple joints and areas at this point in time.
Is there any exercise that I could do? You know, another thing I'd like to mention is I've got one of those massage heads in my shower. Mm-hmm. And if I let that pound on my neck and shoulder, it really does help in movement. You know, it takes a lot of the pain away.
Yeah, well, and that's a good thing. The trick is, though, that sounds like it's giving you temporary relief only. And are there exercises? My response would be that, yes, there will be. It's kind of like what Lori mentioned before in an earlier call there with shoulder. There are some exercises that are going to make you worse. And other exercises that are going to help you. And the goal of the initial program is to get the symptoms up out of your arm and move it towards your neck. And there's a specific set of exercises that help promote that. But again, there's times you have to modify based on what is your range of motion and what kind of deficits are we starting with. And so, you know, it wouldn't take many visits to get you started on a program that you can gear toward helping you self-manage this.
No.
Yeah, there's too much complexity in your problem to say do these and not do those and you'll be fine. It's going to be a lot of trial and error.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck, Ken. Thank you very much for calling. And Lisa in St. Germain, it's your turn. Hi, Lisa.
Hello. I'm a jogger, and typically after jogging or if I go barefoot for any great length of time, the outer two toes on my left foot cramp up quite a bit. And I was wondering if you would know what that was from.
How long has it been going on?
Quite some time. Oh. I mean, it's not a constant thing. It's only, you know, sometimes after I run, but almost all the time if I go barefoot for any great length of time.
Okay. And so when you say quite some time, is that weeks,
years.
Months, a couple of years?
Yeah.
Okay. And has it progressed?
No.
Any other symptoms with it? How long does it take for the cramping to go away?
I don't know. Like I got done running about an hour ago.
Okay.
And I'm barefoot now because I just got out of the shower and they're bothering me. And probably will until I put some shoes on, I imagine.
Okay. So it sounds like it's something related to your foot mechanics and your foot posture. There's a number of things that can go on. You know, it could be a little tarsal tunnel syndrome. It's sort of like a carpal tunnel except in your foot and ankle. It could be simply mechanical related to the stress and posture and you're compromising some vascularity to those toes when you're barefoot, or your running shoes because of how they fit your foot are impairing your vascularity a little bit, and so they cramp until you get on a pair of shoes where it restores your foot posture and restores that circulation. So You know, if it's really bothering you, you could go in and have it checked out and have a physical therapist examine your foot posture and your leg length and your hip and knee posture and see if they can figure out why. But there's nothing in the absence of other symptoms elsewhere, you know, in your hip or back or knee that would lead me to think that this is a significant problem.
Okay. Now, you talked about posture earlier, if I may ask another question, related to neck and shoulders, and I've had neck and shoulder pain for a long time, and I know a lot of it has to do with stress and posture. What would you recommend other than, I mean, it's hard to tell yourself every minute of every day, stand up straight, shoulders back, that sort of thing. Is there anything?
It is?
Yeah, it is. And is there any way to physically train yourself or?
Sure. Well, I mean, first of all, we do, you know, we as a physical therapist, we would instruct you in what feels like the right posture. And as I said earlier, you tend to default into your old postures until you've retrained your new ones. So then we help you with your infrastructure. If there are muscles or things that are tight that are making it difficult for you to stay in a good posture, we help stretch those. If there are other muscles that are weak because of your longstanding posture, we help strengthen those so that you have the infrastructure in place to maintain good posture. And then thereafter, it becomes a matter of habit. And you can come up with any number of little cues of, you know, pictures around your house or, you know, your alarm on your watch beeps every 30 minutes and you check your posture, or every time the phone rings or every time your kid asks you, Mom, will you? You know, it's that cue to check your posture. And then eventually it does become habitual, but you have to figure out what works for your life, what kind of cues you need, auditory, visual, how often, and so on.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, our guests. They'll be with us right up till 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Bill Boisenault, Senior Physical Therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic at UW Hospitals and Clinic, and teaches in the Physical Therapy Program at UW-Madison. Lori Tyne Brody is a Physical Therapist and Athletic Trainer at the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Here to answer your questions. I hope you'll join in with them. And we had a caller online, Lisa, who had a jogger and some neck pains, and I know that Bill, you wanted to make some comments about her.
Yeah, Lisa made a good point about the challenge of when you stop thinking about your posture, then we drop right back into our usual posture that may not be the best for us. And Lori talked about changing habits, and a lot of it is habitual. And the exercises that Lori described oftentimes is where people need to start, but one thing I like to steer people toward is things like yoga and Tai Chi and Pilates that promote postural awareness and alignment.
Yes.
And those are some of the things that can carry over to changing habits during the course of the day. And you're kind of working whole body, not just one muscle or shoulder or your elbow. And so there are, you know, there are activities out there that help promote to get at exactly what Lisa was describing that's so difficult to do.
We have John and Stevens Point up next. John, hello. Thank you for calling.
Yes, this is John.
And what's on your mind?
Well, I want to make some comments that might be helpful for people with shoulder problems and perhaps even more.
Sure.
I'm an orthopedic surgeon, and I've performed research on the shoulder for 28 years. Recently, I wrote the second edition of a book which addresses shoulder pain. The book is Shoulder Pain, the Solution and Prevention. The book is centered about an exercise that I discovered 28 years ago, hanging from an overhead support. This exercise solves 95% of the shoulder problems, which are tears of the rotator cuff caused by deformity of the arch of ligament and bone over the rotator cuff. It becomes deformed with time, gravity, and disuse. You see, the human arm weighs about 10 pounds. And we walk around our life on this earth with our arms pulling on this arch that deforms it. And the only way to reverse this deformity is to do overhead arm activity or hanging.
What do you guys, thank you for calling in the comments. What do you think? Are you familiar with this?
I've heard of his method. We've had some communication with John. And, you know, it's very challenging for most people to be able to hang overhead as an intervention. So we haven't found that. I haven't found any research published in PubMed or a similar database that has studied this in a large enough sample to be able to draw any conclusions from it. You know, from my own experience, most of the people that I see wouldn't be able to tolerate that as an intervention for various shoulder problems.
And again, I don't know what John's population. Generally, that type of stretching, in some ways, you're unweighting or you're distracting the joint a bit, which oftentimes can be a good thing. But the challenge with shoulder, people with shoulder impingement problems, reaching overhead causes pain and causes pinching because of whether it's arthritic changes or just, you know, generally a lack of flexibility. And, you know, I would agree with Lori, the patients I've seen in the past with shoulder problems, I don't think there's a magic bullet out there for, you know, at least for the folks that I have seen. And again, it kind of comes back to what's an okay kind of pain to exercise through and what is not. A lot of people have sharp pain complaints when they raise that arm up overhead. If you put body weight along with that, would cause some irritation in some of the folks that I've seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we certainly appreciate new and novel ways to approach problems because that's often what helps advance medicine. But before we can recommend it to patients, we need to have, you know, some evidence, whether a series of case studies with, you know, some biologic plausibility or theoretical rationale before we could comfortably say that there's enough evidence to apply it to our patient populations.
Across the board, yeah.
All right. John, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. We go to Wagner in Sun Prairie next. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. I have a nephew who's 11, and he's very talented in gymnastics. We're taking them to Milwaukee for about an hour and a half worth of drive. The coach wants this kid there 9 times a week for 3 hours each day. It's about 25, 27 hours training per week. What do you guys say about that for an 11-year-old?
Ooh. Well, as the mother of an 11-year-old, you know, I'd have a hard time feeling like that was healthy for him. Depends upon what he's doing in that training time, but that's a lot of stress and strain on a growing body, especially with gymnastics, with the ranges that they tend to work in and the impact and the loading. It's a lot for a growing and developing body. So, you know, if that was a well-balanced program of some flexibility, some skill, some gentle, resistive training, strength building, you know, it could be all right. But that's a lot of time to be training in gymnastics.
Yeah, I would agree. It sounds like your nephew is probably at a fairly high level to be asked to participate at this intensity. And again, the risk for developing overuse conditions, whether it's a bursitis, tendonitis, stress fractures, are at any age are something to consider. But if with the right training and if they alter the training program enough, he could be able to do it, but that's a lot of stress at that age.
Yeah, and if he gets burned out either physically or mentally at this age, you know, the idea typically of starting children this young in that intensive program is they have visions of a future at the collegiate level or Olympic level. And if they burn out at age 11 because of overuse injuries, as Bill suggested, or mentally because of the intensity of the training, then it will have been for naught.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important to have good coaches, to have parents who set limits on what they think is appropriate for their child.
You'd really want to look at the program itself and the what happens each day in that program in each hour.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult because if you have aspirations to compete at the level Lori talked about, it's kind of as a level of training that seems to be necessary. And so whether you're talking about figure skating, gymnastics, you know, wrestling, it's just without really proper preparation and cross-training, it sets kids up for developing a variety of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is our concern. We do have – I am a coach myself. I coach swimming.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the number one in the state right now.
Yeah.
Loves what he's doing.
Yep.
Does have a few injuries already.
Yeah.
He's building a little scar tissue on one of his ankles. And, you know, that is the question. I question myself. So we're doing a little homework to find out.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. As a swim coach, there has been research suggesting that the mileage that swimmers swim is also unhealthy for them, and that you get to a certain point where there's no additional improvement in their times or scores or performance with the additional training. So that's the same theory that I apply here, that you get to a certain point where the additional training isn't adding any value to their outcome or their performance, and probably cutting back would probably help them function at a better level all around.
Mm.
Well, thank you so much. We do appreciate your input.
Sure. Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. We got a caller from Gutenberg, Iowa, who has PMR, polymyalgia rheumatica. Wonders if there are any special exercises that would be helpful for that condition.
Well, I see a few people with polymyalgia rheumatica, which is in the family of autoimmune rheumatologic disorders, multiple joint pain, muscle pain throughout their body. And the pool is a great place for these folks to exercise because of the unweighting that occurs, the ease of movement. They often, it's just painful for them to try to move and exercise on land. And so you end up becoming sedentary, and then your joints hurt more, and then you gain weight, and you start just this whole downward spiral. So getting in a pool and getting some gentle exercise there to keep your joints loose, to get out and socialize with people, to stay active, tends to be a really good option for these folks.
Lynn in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Lynn.
Good afternoon. I have a question about knee pain after exercise.
Okay.
I am actually sitting in the parking lot of my gym waiting to go in once I hang up here. I usually spend about a half hour on, I call it a ski machine. It's an elliptical with hand bars on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes during that and usually afterwards, one of my knees hurts. It's kind of in the back center of the knee. And I've tried paying attention to how my feet are pointed. I've tried, you know, altering how it's turned out or turned in a little. I've looked up some stretches online. How could I, what else can I do to try to prevent this pain?
So it happens typically afterwards or while you're doing it?
Almost always afterwards, and usually while I'm in motion, yes.
Okay. So about how long until you get into it does it show up?
Probably 15, 20 minutes maybe.
Okay. So then it starts to come on and it gradually builds up to a certain level and then it stays there?
Yeah.
And then how long until it disappears afterwards?
It usually hurts off and on until I sleep overnight.
Okay. And it doesn't bother you in any other activities?
Well, I don't do a lot of other activity. I mean, I've never noticed it when I was riding my bike.
Okay.
Bicycle.
Okay.
I don't walk a lot, but sometimes my knee hurts when I walk.
Okay.
This is the most intense regular exercise I do.
All right.
Why I signed up for the club.
Right, right. So we still don't know if it's due to the intensity of the exercise or that specific exercise of the elliptical.
Yeah.
elliptical tends to flare up knee pain, although not typically in the back of the knee. It tends to flare up pain in the front of the knee. So, you know, and things that happen in the back of the knee, usually pain in the back of the knee is a muscle. They have some muscle attachments there. It could be that, or it's a little meniscus tear, a little bit of arthritis that's flared up that you feel in the back of your knee. Does your knee swell afterwards? Feel swollen or warm?
I've never noticed that it swells.
Okay. All right. Then it probably isn't, because you'd probably notice it if it was. So, you know, I'd say stick with the stretching, you know, foot position. You did all the right things. The only other thing I'd say is maybe a little heel lift in both your shoes to see if it's related to the muscle attachments in the back of your knee. Try some hamstring, some calf stretching. And as you're doing the elliptical, I would focus on, to the best of your ability, pushing with your quads, tightening your quads in the front of your thigh to stabilize your knee better, as well as a little bit of glute work, pulling in some core to see if it has to do with the sort of motor programs you have that you use on the elliptical, taking kind of the easy way out where you're pushing with some of your calf instead of pushing down with your quads in front.
Okay.
And
can you point me to a website or, you know, someplace where I can get, because the stretches that I found, I didn't find them very clear or helpful.
Okay. Well, you know, if you belong to a club, boy, I would sure hope that the staff there would help you out. Is there staff there to help you with those kinds of questions?
I asked the head trainer, and he just said, oh, well, look up online and do some leg stretches.
So,
I didn't find helpful.
Yeah. Good grief.
I tried that.
Try looking specifically for calf stretch and hamstring stretch. So a calf stretch is where you lean against the wall and your hips are straight, your knee's straight, and then your heel is down on the ground. You feel it pulling in the back of your calf. You do that with your knee straight and with your knee bent.
Okay.
And then a hamstring stretch, probably the easiest way is to lay on your back, put your hands behind your thigh and pull your knee up and then straighten your knee out. You feel it pull behind your thigh.
Okay.
All right. A couple to
Thank
do.
You.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Rob in Onalaska, your turn. Hi, Rob.
Hi. How are you today?
Good. Thanks for calling.
About 2.5 years ago, I was training for a marathon, and when I increased my mileage, I was suffering foot pain in my forefoot between my toe and the arch of my foot towards the top of my foot. And I have been preparing for a half marathon and recently upped my mileage from about 12 to 15 to closer to 20 miles a week. And yesterday when I did a longer run of about 10 miles, I started getting the same pain in my forefoot. And what I've done in the past is I've just, with athletic tape, taped from basically the back of my toe towards my arch and have run on it. And I'm wondering what might be causing it and is continuing to do that this time in preparing for a half marathon going to cause permanent injury? Because when it happened before, I would tape it, run on it, it would be painful for a little while, and I just kept taping it and there would be some pain. But and it's recurring now after 2.5 years, and I've been running since that time, both outside on pavement and on trails and on a treadmill during the winter.
Okay. And you haven't had that pain until you got to that certain level of mileage?
Nope. And I've been, you know, consistently at about 15 a week, and I'm just ratcheting it up a little bit now, and I noticed it after I ran yesterday on a treadmill.
Okay. And can you tell me a little bit more specifically where this pain is? You said your forefoot towards,
yeah,
or is it right at the ball of your foot?
It's towards the ball of my foot, but on the top part of my foot.
Oh, on the top of your foot.
Yeah.
So right where the kind of where your brake is?
Yeah.
Okay. The first thing I'd say is it's not a very common place to hurt on the top of your foot, is if your shoe or something is rubbing there, if your shoe is breaking where it's supposed to be.
I'm not sure. Last time it happened, I thought it was a pair of shoes I had. I switched the shoes, and it continued to bother. The pair of shoes that I ran, I do rotate shoes. I have two or three pairs of running shoes
okay.
that I alternate. these ones may be towards the end of their mileage, but I don't know if it's the shoe or not. It's the shoe I've ran on for a couple of months without any problems, both outside and on a treadmill.
Right, but you have a mileage threshold that seems to trigger this. So those shoes may be fine for that level of mileage, but not for the longer mileage.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, my first inclination, especially since the taping kind of helped, is that it has to do with your shoe and the stiffness of your shoe, because you're adding tape, which is increasing the stiffness.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I might go spend a little bit of time at a store where they are well-versed in running shoes and running mechanics and the materials for your shoe, and check out a different shoe.
Okay.
Short of that, stick with the athletic tape. It's doing something. Are you causing permanent damage? Probably not.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd start with that.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Thanks very much for calling. While we're on the topic of running, Chris in Antioch, Illinois, wondered about your opinion of the Vibram Five Fingers or similar types of barefoot shoes. Has seen many conflicting evaluations and wondered if you had an unbiased, medically sound opinion.
Unbiased?
That's in the eye of the beholder, isn't it?
I know. Yeah, it is. It is. Well, as we've said before on the show, you know, every person's different, and there are interventions that work for some people that don't work for other people. That can be said for almost anything, which is why we often recommend that somebody go see a professional who can match the right intervention to you. So what works for Bill may not work at all for me. What works for me may not work for my sister, who is genetically very similar to me, because we're just put together differently. So the barefoot running and the five-finger shoes and stuff, there's going to be a subset of the population who does great with those. And you'll hear all kinds of stories, and you'll see things published for this subset of people, and they're going to tell you it's great. Does it work for everybody? Absolutely not. You know, there are all kinds of people and all kinds of foot problems, and you've heard on the radio today people calling with their problems. Is the answer for them going to be to put on these, to go barefoot running or wear these shoes? Absolutely not. Historically and anthropologically, we're not designed to run on the kinds of surfaces you find in this country barefoot or in these kinds of shoes. So, you know, if you were raised in a country where you grew up and your parents grew up and your great grandparents grew up walking around and running around barefoot, and you have that kind of genetics, then you'll probably do fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I just heard this discussion on the side at the health club last evening, and one person loved them and another person said it was the worst thing for their feet. And it's like anything else. It's if you haven't been wearing footwear like this throughout your life, and you make a dramatic change in footwear like that without any kind of transition, you're setting yourself up to fail. And so the trick is, how do you can't rent them for a month and see if they work for you. I mean, that's the challenge. But anybody who decides to go in that direction, again, they should transition into the wear in terms of, you know, shorter time frames to start with. Let your body adapt to it as you start increasing mileage you know, with that particular. It'd be the same thing. We were talking high heels. We're having the exact same discussion. If you have been wearing high heels all your life and all of a sudden you put on 3-inch spikes, for a lot of people, your body's going to object to that, that kind of dramatic change.
Right, right. So starting out walking with them before you even run.
Right.
That way, if something does go amiss, you don't have a mess to unravel.
Yeah.
Quick caller from Madison would like you to comment about beds. Good mattress to help with stiffness. What do you think about the Sleep Number beds or the foam-type beds in the last minute here?
I think anything that can conform to your body and maintain that support, in principle, is a good thing. It's the same principle with sitting posture and footwear. And you can add, you know, a mattress pad to soften it a bit if it's too firm for somebody. And we've talked before, and it doesn't work in all places, but again, if you can try a mattress for 30 days and be able to return if it doesn't fit you, that's the ideal. But the idea of it conforming to your body shape and supporting the curves of our body is a good principle.
And with that, I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody. Thank you so much for listening in today. And Bill and Lori, thank you so much for being with us, and you're back on the 16th of May.
Yes, we are.
Fantastic.
Look forward to it.
All right. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, our guests today. Bill is senior physical therapist at the UW Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic. Lori, physical therapist and athletic trainer at the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. They'll be back on May 16th. Tomorrow at 11, we talk with the UW Extension entomologist Phil Pelletieri about how to attract good bugs and deter the bad ones. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.